Since the 1800s, Hickok & Boardman Insurance Group has been providing quality service and peace of mind to our clients. With our offices in Burlington, Stowe, and St. Albans, and our Dennis Ricker & Brown offices in Montpelier and Lynnonville, we are here when you need us.
It's time for Radio Vermont's News and Public Affairs program, Open Mic with Hester Fuller. Phone lines to speak with Hester are open at 802-244-1777 and toll-free at 1-877-291-8255. And here's your host, Hester Fuller.
Thanks, Tom. Good morning, everybody. A somber morning this morning as we contemplate the events of the weekend. Reminds me that we are WDEV News Radio, and we are going to stay on top of this morning. And as developments warrant, we will be bringing you the latest information on our airwaves. For now, though, I'd really love to hear from you. What are your thoughts about the events of the weekend? What did you think when you first heard the news? What do you think the next steps are? What does this mean for some of the questions that that seem to get raised repeatedly in this country, because this happens all too darned often? Give us a call at 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. That's our number here on Open Mic. A cloudy Monday morning. I don't know what we're going to do with this weather all week except just get along with it. It should be going away by the end of the week. Roger Hill tells us that things will perk up by the end of the week. In the meantime, though, cloudy, gray, kind of blends with my mood this morning a little bit, I'm afraid. But I will count on you guys to perk up my mind, as you always do every Monday morning. Looking forward to your thoughts on the news and events of the week and the weekend. Give us a call here at 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. I'm here with my trusty Rock of Gibraltar, Mr. Tom McLeod. How are you, Tom?
Well, good morning. That's great praise indeed. Good way to start a Monday.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way. Yes. I certainly feel that way.
Thank you. And I noticed, actually, Roger, on Wednesday forward, so sunshine, mid-70s.
Well, that'd be a good thing.
So that's sooner the better.
That'd be good.
It was a tough weekend.
What did you do with your weekend?
Well, I had to work a six-day week, but I had a good time. And then yesterday, I pretty much just slept. But then when I woke up, I know that that man had shot that pop star on Friday in Orlando.
Right. Yep.
And I caught that. I said, well, that's... And then before
that was also in Florida?
I think it was in Orlando, too. I think. I didn't really get into it.
We got to check our facts on that one and see. But boy, oh boy, that's crazy.
And then, so that was senseless. And then I was asleep. And then when I woke up, what's on TV?
Mm-hmm.
So I had kind of a delayed digestion of that. And
jeez.
I said, it took me a little while to figure out what they were talking about, but...
Unbelievable. And our hearts go out to those affected. We're all affected, I think, when something like this happens, when people who are just out having a fun Saturday night bleeding into Sunday morning, and somebody, some fool, walks in and starts unloading that way. It's just not okay. Not okay, and terribly, terribly sad for all of us. We'd like to know your thoughts about the events of the weekend or your thoughts about other things that we ought to be paying attention to. Give us a call at 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. It's an open mic, our first hour this morning, as we often do on Monday morning, because it's good to hear what our listeners are thinking about after they spent their weekends. Love to know what you think about these events. Love to know what else you're thinking about. Love to know what you think we ought to be paying attention to, too. Give us a call, 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255.
How about the Red Sox this weekend? They lost last night.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Saturday, 15-4.
Whoa, they used it all up in one game.
Yeah, well, and they won Friday night, too, so two out
games.
Of three. And, of course, the Twins are struggling, so it's
I'll take it.
Orioles back in town Tuesday.
Yeah, they're getting Mondays off now, right? They usually do.
Well, last week they had to travel out to San Francisco Monday, play Tuesday, Wednesday. Then they traveled on Thursday, had the night off. It was a weird schedule just to have two games last week.
Yeah, it is.
And they were late
strange.
Games.
It is kind of strange. Weather's not hurting them, though.
No.
That's good. They're able to stick to things pretty well. Give us a call here at WDEV News Radio. This is the Open Mic program, and we love to hear from our listeners. Give us a call at 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Our first hour is all about you and what you care about today, so we want to hear from you. What are the things you're thinking about? What are the things you think we ought to be paying attention to this morning? We'd like to know what you think. give us a call here. In our second hour, we're going to welcome a friend of the station and a friend of mine and a friend of a lot of people who can hear my voice this morning. Bethany Dunbar will be here. She is, of course, the Community Projects Director from the Center for an Agricultural Economy. And we like to check in with her on a regular basis because so many interesting things are going on up there in the Northeast Kingdom, in Caledonia County and beyond. I know that she's involved in a couple of new projects, and some of the projects that have been underway for some time are humming right along, and she has new developments to tell us about. So she will be here in our 10 o'clock hour, and we will be interested in your calls then as well. We're interested in your calls any old time, 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Like Bill from Barry, he's calling in this morning. What's on your mind, Bill? Are you there? Not really. I think we're going to need you to call us back just because the line is kind of crummy. Certainly want to hear from you, though, so write down the number and give us another call, 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Listeners make the morning here on Mondays especially, and especially on a news-heavy morning. Like this one. What a shockeroo to wake up yesterday morning and hear about the events in Orlando overnight, Saturday night. Terribly, terribly sad for a lot of people. Love to hear what you think about these events and what you think the proper next steps are for us as a society, for us as a nation. What do we do in addition to sending our condolences and expressing our solidarity with the folks who were directly impacted by this event? Bill from Barry, you call us again? Did you get in this time?
Yes, I hope you can still hear me.
I can hear you now. That's much better.
All right.
Thanks for calling back.
That was terrible. This was, as they said, the worst gun terrorist in this country, worst gun shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Country, but I do want to say that there were things like 9/11,
mm-hmm.
That bombing of the building in Oklahoma City,
mm-hmm.
a lot of other things that happened that didn't have anything to do with guns. As a matter of fact, the police in Orlando were looking for a bomb.
Mm-hmm.
The bombs were some of the things. In fact, I think I heard this in Vermont News, yes I did, somebody had a pipe bomb in his hand in a car, I think it was in the Burlington area, and it blew up.
I did not hear that. That has not been in the news, and I would want to check my facts on that before
I saw it on Channel 3.
You saw it on Channel 3?
Yeah.
I have not. I did not see it on Channel 3, so I would want to affirm that before I spread it around.
I want to say how I feel about any of these. Oh, I can spread it around because I saw it on Channel 3.
Well, how do you feel about it?
Apparently, and they stopped. The person actually, luckily, only lost a finger. Now, well, I'm saying that's luckily, but it was stupid. It was a pipe bomb.
Well, let's stick to Orlando
but anyway,
for now.
Let's get to Orlando because it's kind of... I'm not saying it's personal because I don't know anyone that was blown up, but I really was upset. I used to live in Florida. My son, my grandson, my granddaughter live in Florida, and the worst thing is my son lives in Port St. Lucie.
Mm.
And I saw on the TV, they showed the home of the parents, which was a nice home in a nice neighborhood. So I don't know.
Well, Port St. Lucie, that's now how is that connected here? He lived in Fort Pierce, right?
He came from Port St. Lucie.
I think it was...
up there. That is on the East Coast. That is about 100 and some miles from there. And that's down there in the direction of Palm Beach. It's further up to Palm Beach, closer to like what the Space Center is.
Now, connect it up for me. Connect the dots for me, because I'm not following your argument here.
He drove up that night,
mm-hmm.
100 and some miles, from Port St. Lucie to Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
He parked out in front of the nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
And he went, I guess he had a shootout with a cop or some type of authority. And I guess he didn't kill that one. But he got in past them and then started shooting people.
Well, what do you make of this? What is the right response for us as a nation to events like this as they unfold?
I feel that we need more protection. We need more both police, military, and intelligence. We need to look at these people. Now, the FBI already had looked at this guy and dismissed it. But, and so what I think they need is, and we shouldn't be cheap about our protection against these things, because none of the other things that we want to do for people will mean anything. If even just one of these instances, this particular instance, I will want to say something I thought was really super in the lines of people standing in line waiting to give blood.
Mm-hmm.
That was super.
Mm-hmm.
It was. They didn't know these people, but they stood in line and did it. And they're going to do it some more. And the way the hospital jumped in and saved lives.
Mm-hmm.
We show that we have it. This country does have it. It's just getting it together. And I just don't think that the country should be cheap about protection.
Protection.
Not just the military and the guns the police have, but it is being able to have enough resources to keep an eye on people like that.
And it's really hard, though, don't you agree, when it comes to actually identifying these folks?
It is hard, but see, they can keep these people a little better in their radar.
Well, you know, any screen...
It's almost impossible.
Yes, it is.
We don't want this to happen.
No, we don't.
We cannot put on guards outside of every night.
That's right, and we also can't. We cannot. Compromise an open society unduly, in the name of protection. So, and I think that's the crux of the dilemma. You've really, really identified it, Bill, and I really thank you for your call. Please. Call in and let us know what you think of the events in Orlando. 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Rama from Williamstown, how are you this morning?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Before I get off on what I really want to say here is I do want to one point that I know I agree with Bill on, and this is when it comes to people and how they react to circumstances. And if people in general, I don't think it's just this country. If people in general are given a positive action to take in the face of adversary or adversity, they'll do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been shown time after time after time throughout history. So, I think that just speaks to the basic goodness of people, not everybody.
No, I think you're absolutely right about that. It does. Events like this do tend to bring out the good side of the folks and the way we all do pull together.
Now, we have a cultural problem going on in the United States and the rest of the world, too. And this cultural problem is being driven in good part by the profit motives of the international and domestic weapons industry.
Mm-hmm.
And they're interested in selling weapons anywhere and everywhere, as many as possible, in order to drive up profits. They don't care what the end result of the use of these weapons is, whether it's a civil war in Syria or terrorist actions here in the United States. It doesn't really matter to this industry. And the cultural problem is that they're driving this public discussion which says, oh my gosh, we can't take away people's right to carry any weaponry of any sort anywhere, anytime that they want to, and may even make it easier for them to use. As a matter of fact, sure, and not only that, we need to arm more people. And, people are missing the storyline here that if you arm everybody heavily, you end up with Mexico and Syria, and you end up with Lebanon and Afghanistan.
Well, it just seems like it makes no sense to arm up absolutely everybody in some of these situations. Just handing someone a gun doesn't make them a good firearms user or a responsible gun user. So just handing them out seems to be...
And it doesn't make anybody safer necessarily. And so, but this is the arguments that are being put forth, and people repeat these. And, some of these people are well-intentioned when they repeat them, and other people are just repeating them because they just don't care. They're selfish and don't care about.
Well, let me ask you what you think about this idea. This sort of fits in with your cultural argument. I would argue that here in Vermont, the culture around firearms is quite different than it is in urban settings and in other places where guns, you know, are not part of sort of everyday life. Would you agree with that?
No. I think that's a misstatement because, first of all, hunting is not just Vermont.
No, of course it isn't.
Hunting is across the country. And AR-15s, even the civilian model of these, not, you know, these high-capacity, quick-fire, non-semi-automatics that incidentally can be outfitted with legal equipment to make them fire as fast as an automatic, they're not hunting weapons.
Mm-hmm.
These are weapons which are designed and to kill. Just kill. It's not a matter. They're not out there to go hunting. So this isn't about a hunting culture or anything like this. And this insistence, hunters don't carry their hunting rifles.
Well, I'm not talking about a hunting culture. I'm talking about a cultural attitude towards weapons and responsibility.
Well, this is what I'm talking about, too. And even the mere mention in Vermont of doing something to bring in some common sense regulation of how firearms are dispensed and what can be done with them and who should be held responsible for their use, et cetera, brings up plenty of homegrown angst over, oh, my gosh, you're going to take away my rights to carry anything I want anywhere, anytime, and do what I want with it. So, no, I don't buy that argument. Vermont is not special on this. It's just that, listen, people are doing the mass murders where most people are, unfortunately. But, you know, Vermont, if we think that we're special for some reason, then we're deluding ourselves. And we weren't so special to keep away the opium addiction problem, and we're not going to be so special as to keep out of this gun debate.
I hear you. And I think, you know, that is something definitely worth pondering, and I appreciate the call. We need to cut to another caller, though, because they're starting to back up. And, Rama, I really appreciate your phoning in, as you do almost every single week, and look forward to talking to you again. Peter from Waitsfield, what's on your mind this morning?
Good morning, Esther. Good morning, Tom. First of all, you really should bone up on the news if you're going to host a news show. I believe it was Friday in Orlando, Florida, after a concert while signing autographs when the singer was shot.
Yes, that's right.
It was in Orlando, not just in the same state, in the same city. And secondly, I believe it was around the same day that three people in a car in on Shelburne Road, I believe, in South Burlington, had a pipe bomb go off.
Mm.
I presume unintentionally, but it blew the fingers off the guy holding the bomb.
Yep, you know, when you mentioned Shelburne Road, I do recall that story.
So that is confirmed news.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that came up around the same day, I believe, that the guy blew his fingers off was a Supreme Court ruling stating that in states, I presume this only applies to states like Vermont, where I believe you can legally carry a concealed gun provided you don't go into a post office, a courthouse, or a bank. Vermont does have some of the most liberal gun laws in the nation and some of the lowest rates of gun violence. And that's the other word I hate is gun violence. We need to separate the term gun violence and just talk about violence, because if we did get rid of the guns, it could be worse. You'd have a guy like this go in with a bunch of homemade pipe bombs or pressure cooker bombs. And really, so what's ironic to me is that the Supreme Court would have this ruling that only people who have a legitimate threat can have a permit to carry a concealed gun. Now, if we instead loosened those laws, let me remind you of another mass shooting. It took place in Killeen, Texas. A guy lost it and smashed through a restaurant in his pickup truck and got out and started shooting up everyone in the restaurant. And there was a woman having lunch with her mother and father who survived by playing dead under the dying bodies of her parents. She was a licensed gun owner, but in Texas you can't carry a gun. You can carry a gun in your car, but you can't legally carry it in your purse or on your person. And so her gun, which she was familiar with, trained to use, was in her car because she's not a lawbreaker.
Mm-hmm.
She's not a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to follow the law. And if she had had her gun in her purse with her parents, she might have been on the cover of Newsweek as the latest hero in the United States.
I think the things that you're saying is are pointing to the point I was trying to make a little bit earlier, which is that there is a difference that we need to honor, which is between gun violence and violence. And there's something about the attitude that people have toward firearms as, you know, powerful things that deserve to be used with respect. That just seems always to get lost here. The argument quickly runs to gun control, quickly runs to banning access sometimes for people. And really, it does seem to come down to cultivating an attitude toward these items that protects us from this kind of thing.
Well, it would be terribly unfortunate if the deaths of these folks and the previous victims of so-called gun violence were used to advance a political agenda that may not have any positive result.
Any bearing on the solving the problem, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, what about, if we're going to have a debate about this, what about having liberalizing our laws about concealed carry? Because, you know, the situations where these violent crimes take place, you know, they often happen in states with strict gun laws. And if one person in that nightclub had a gun on them, they could have stopped this guy. And also, here's another question. The shooting started at 2 o'clock in the morning, and yes, there was an off-duty police officer who was acting as a security guard at the club who he exchanged fire with. Now, the SWAT team didn't breach the building till 5 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Why did they wait so long?
Good
That's a question that we need answers to.
Mm-hmm. I believe there were negotiations going on.
Well, yeah, you know,
it was a hostage situation by that point.
Well, let's be real. They could have gotten to him a lot quicker than he could have finished off. They could have gotten in. If they had gotten in there at 2:15 instead of 5 o'clock, how many people would they have been able to save?
Well, I guess that's one of the things we're going to have to wait to hear the investigation report to understand that. I think that is certainly a question I'd like to hear the answer to as well. Getting back to your point that you just made a minute ago, the idea of liberalizing laws about concealed carry. What do you say to the folks who have the argument that just handing a gun to somebody, whether they carry it concealed or carry it openly, isn't necessarily the way to go with this, because just handing somebody a gun isn't going to make them an expert?
Hang on. I'm not saying let's just hand a gun to somebody.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is that there are a lot of people who choose to protect themselves at their homes, but when the law states that you can't protect yourself at any time outside your home, then law-abiding citizens are not going to carry their guns into a place because it's against the law.
I hear you. How do we ensure that
a criminal is not going to bother with that.
That's
so
right.
My point is that if you restrict legal gun carry laws, then what you do is you effectively make people targets.
I hear you.
It makes it easier for an ISIS supporter or some guy who just, you know, his wife left him and took the dog and he flipped out and drove into a restaurant. In any of these situations, it would make the victim list shorter.
I hear you, Peter, and I really want to thank you for calling in with that very well expressed opinion on things. We have another call from Hardwick. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind? Who is this, anyway?
A couple of things. First of all, I was listening earlier. I've been trying to get on for quite a while here. Mm-hmm. Listening earlier about you talking about the kid in the pipe bomb over in Burlington.
Yeah.
And the fact that you don't know that shows how poorly informed you are.
Well, that's true. It certainly does.
Okay. And the fact that this is tragedy down in Orlando and how well it fits into the media scheme of their agenda.
What's their agenda?
Gay facility.
What's your agenda? What's the agenda again?
The agenda is promoting the gay agenda. The anti-gun agenda, but they didn't say one thing about the terrorism or Islam or...
Well, I beg to differ with you.
Terrorists.
I beg to differ with you. I think that's been the center of the conversation about the events in Orlando, that it has been seen as a terrorist attack. It certainly has been. 50 people killed. Somebody just walking into a nightclub at night. I think I'm going to have to disagree with you there. We are unfortunately at a point in time, in fact, we're a little bit late for it, where we need to cut away for a little bit of business. And we'll be back with Open Mic after these words. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic here on WDEV. Hester Fuller is my name, and we are here until 11 o'clock this morning. This hour, we're just taking your calls and listening to the things that you're concerned about and your comments. We've been focusing mainly on the news out of Orlando this weekend, but if you have other topics you'd like to discuss, we certainly welcome them. Give us a call at 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. At 10 o'clock, we're going to welcome our friend Bethany Dunbar in. She is going to be coming down from the Center for an Agricultural Economy based up in Hardwick with some news about the wonderful community programs that are underway up there. Lots of developments up there that I think will hearten all of us, and I'm looking forward to chatting with Bethany about those. That's at 10 o'clock, but in the meantime, we're looking to hear from you guys. Give us a call. 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. What are the thoughts in your mind this morning? What do you think we should be paying attention to this week? Give us a call and let us know. I'm here with Tom McLeod, who is sitting behind the desk in there, and he's ready to answer the calls and get everybody lined up, and we certainly are looking forward to hearing from you. 1-877-291-8255 is our toll-free number, or you can reach us at 244-1777. It's a Monday morning on Open Mic, and as we often do on Monday, we just open up the mic. We want to hear from you about the things that you want to talk about. Esther from Montpelier, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good, yeah. I haven't been up that long, but I'm doing good.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
No, I'll tell you one thing. According to the Bible, things are going to get a lot worse before they get better.
Well, I hear that.
And we do hear a lot of this. I mean, you know, like I had a minister in Connecticut, and she was in a mall one day, and there was a shooting. But it happened, she was on one side, and the shooting was on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
The same way going across the bridge to go to York.
Mm-hmm.
Had she been about three cars ahead, she would have gone down through, but she wasn't.
Boy, oh boy. Sometimes
but
it's just luck.
If I didn't have the Lord, I wouldn't, you know, I'd really be lost, I know, because... But as I said, I know things are going to get worse. And then it bothers me. I didn't know anybody out there. But even then, I mean, you hate. I don't care. Like, I say, if somebody come in here and stole something of mine, that's nothing like it is if somebody dies.
I know it. It's really, really, it's just incomprehensible to me that someone would take that as a project for a Saturday evening. It's just really.
But, I mean, and they get until now, they're hurting the hunters. Now, I don't care for guns anyway. I would never shoot one, never have, never will. But the hunters like to go out, you know, like deer hunting and things like that. Well, the rate they're going, it's going to be very hard for them to go out and do anything because they're going to pass a law that's going to be hard to eat. Well, it's kind of hard not to get a gun, but...
Well, I don't know. I think
sometimes they don't check them out so much as they should.
Well, I appreciate your perspective on these events, Esther, and I hope you'll give us another call sometime. You got thoughts on your mind about what happened in Orlando or what's in the news, or if you'd like to talk about something else entirely, give us a call at 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. Here at WDEV News Radio, we are monitoring the wires to keep on top of any new developments that come out of Florida. I haven't seen anything just yet. But we will certainly bring you the news as we get it. Give us a call here and let us know what's on your mind this morning. 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. Sounds to me, Tom, like lots of people have this on their minds.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the large, even if one person, it's always a tragedy, was killed. But now with the volume of people and of course, today it's going to be very emotional. It's a tough day for everybody, and emotions, you know, a few days. You know, the opinions are good, and I'm not referring, but just in general, nationwide, worldwide, those first couple days are just, everybody's very numb, very very upset. I know I am.
I know I am, too. Yeah. And I don't think I knew anybody who was there, but I haven't actually looked at the list yet. And it just appalls me that anybody would even think of some kind of a stunt like this. It just, and what's frustrating to me is I don't really see how you can prevent it if someone has just taken a notion.
There's always a way to do something. That's the end. Whether it's guns, it could be something else.
So. It certainly could be. To me, though, it means you know, standing up and living your life in a better, more positive way. Not that that's going to stop a wingnut, but what are you going to do?
I find it amazing, though, you think of, I mean, how upset, how shocked we are when you have the rescue people, be it the paramedics or the police officers, at this or any scene when, you know, there's just some places where we kind of freeze. We don't know what to do. And these people can function and make hard calls at times like this or any time. My hat's off to them.
Mine too.
I don't think I could do it.
I don't know that I could do it either.
Wish I could, but it's just...
You know, that'd be a really good show, because I know that periodically a lot of the rescue services and the community safety groups around the state are in a recruiting frame of mind, and I think that might be a really interesting program to have those folks in talking about the work of being the person who looks out for the safety of the community and confronts these things and helps in the aftermath. We'll see about organizing that. I get most of my good ideas for future shows from listening to what the listeners have to say here. So if you have some thoughts about something you think would be a good program, give us a call at 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. It's about 20 minutes of 10, and in our second hour this morning, we're going to change gears a little bit and talk about some wonderful stuff that's going on through the Center for an Ag Economy. We have Bethany Dunbar, who is their community programs manager. She'll be coming in and bringing us up to speed on a lot of different things, including a community organizing effort that she's been part of. The community gardens are really going full tilt now, and lots more. So I hope you'll all stay tuned for that program. Coming up at 11 o'clock this morning, we're welcoming Bill Sayre once again with Common Sense Radio, a project of the Ethan Allen Institute. And I haven't seen yet, so I'm going to be surprised. I'm going to be surprised by what Bill brings.
Yeah,
I haven't seen yet what his lineup is going to be for today or for this week, but it's always interesting. It's always thought-provoking.
He usually has one, and it's usually printed out here, but sometimes he's a little light.
Well,
so
you know,
that's
aren't we
okay.
all?
Yeah, no, it's Monday.
It is Monday. We all get going at different speeds.
And you can listen to us on the podcast here.
Oh, that's right. We should mention the podcast.
Yeah. You can get anywhere you have a computer streaming. Just go to WDEV in the search engine and click on the open mic icon, and you can just follow Jay Austin. Her puts together a synopsis of the shows and the recordings, usually no later than the day later.
Yep.
Sometimes earlier, but I don't want to put
really
a lot
on
of
the
pressure
ball.
On him. I don't want to say in 57 minutes. No, it takes a little while. He's got a bunch of things going on down there, but he does a great job. Well, that stuff he does on the websites and more.
Yep, he's really, we're very lucky to have him. He's really on the ball with this stuff. You going to be around here Wednesday, Tom?
Yes, I hear that you are too.
I am. I'm going to be sitting in this chair again on Wednesday and welcoming a couple of wonderful guests in. 9 o'clock hour will feature Abby Willard of the Vermont Agency of Agriculture, Food, and Marketing. And they've got a new report that's just coming out. It's a preliminary price comparison. Prices at farmers markets versus some of the other places where you can buy produce in the state of Vermont. And I think most people listening will be interested in what they have discovered. It might not be what you expect. Also coming up on Wednesday, we'll be looking forward to a conversation, including Ross Connolly of the Hardwick Gazette. You might have read about him in the paper last week. He's the fellow who has been editing the Gazette for 16 million years and is getting done. And the way he's getting done is he's holding an essay contest. If you write an essay and submit the application fee and you are selected, you may wind up owning the Hardwick Gazette, lock, stock, and barrel. But we're going to have Ross come in, and we're going to have a discussion about the role of the weeklies. Weeklies are important up here. Weeklies, almost every little town seems to have one or have one that covers it in depth, and they serve a very particular role up here. Many of us have internet. Yeah, most of us have television. We may or may not watch it, and certainly we have radio. But the weekly papers serve a very particular function here, and I'm going to look forward to that conversation. That'll be in our 10 o'clock hour this Wednesday. Right now, though, we're going to hop out to Moncton, where Paul's on the line. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Hester.
What's on your mind?
I've been listening intently to the conversation, and the typical subjects come up, gun violence, mm-hmm. Terrorism, but I have not heard mention of the phrase hate crime.
Uh-huh.
And I'm wondering what people think about that, what you think about that.
What do I think about that?
It's a gay bar primarily, and you have a man purportedly who is Muslim, and Islam faith does have some rather violent views towards people who are homosexual in some cases. And
well, you know, rather than jump right to Muslim, I would certainly jump to him swearing allegiance to ISIS, and we know that ISIS has been just doing appalling things with folks they discover or they believe to be gay. As far as hate crime goes, I mean, what else could it be? You know, I just don't know.
I just hadn't heard the discussion about that. Yeah. I'm kind of curious as to what makes you why we haven't been discussing that.
Well, I'm not sure why. I think we're all still in our first stages of dealing, and I think although you know, hate crime leaps to the forefront for a good chunk of our audience, other ways of defining it may leap to the forefront as well. For some, it may just seem that the hate crime aspect is just so obvious that it almost doesn't feel like it needs mentioning, but who knows? And I think it would be interesting to find out from our listeners what they think about that.
I appreciate your patience in terms of waiting to get more information before maybe jumping to some conclusions, because that certainly hasn't been the case in the past, i.e. Gabby Giffords being shot, talking mm-hmm. about rhetoric, and or the Duke Lacrosse rape case. So I applaud, you know, the let's sit back and get more information view.
Well, I also, you know, I certainly could be more on top of it, but I think like all of us, I know some things and I don't know other things, and I know different things than you might know, and you might know different things that some of our listeners might know, and I think by pooling what we have, we can try to come to some sort of intelligent, informed response to these events. But right now, I'm still kind of reeling. Thank you, Paul, and I hope you'll call us again. Kim from Burlington, you're on the air on Open Mic.
Thanks for taking my call. I just want to comment on the gun control issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm probably center right on the gun control issue on laws around gun control.
Yeah.
I don't like to call it gun control because it's a red flag for the right. But I'm also understanding that I think we need to have checks and balances on who owns firearms and who doesn't. I'm baffled by why this man who was flagged by the FBI was allowed to skate and buy these weapons without showing up on the background.
Well, you know, that's been bothering me, too. I'm really glad you brought that up because
he may have been checked, you know, or attempted to, but there's a 3-day wait.
Well, not only that, but what does the check consist of? Has the check been so watered down that that these kinds of folks get through it?
Well, I'll tell you my experience. My guess is that he maybe never been checked. That because if it's 3 days and they don't get to it, it's mm-hmm. just automatically assumed that there's not a problem, or that mm-hmm. you know, they can't, according to the Second Amendment in the law, they can't restrict his right to own that firearm because they didn't get around to the background check,
mm-hmm.
and that's fine with me too. But I'm going to tell you the problem is how the federal government operates and how they can never seem to do anything efficiently. Now I'm going to tell you, I had a problem when I was 19 years old. It turned into, and I got convicted of a violent offense at age 19. I am now 60, almost 63 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a big deal. It amounted to basically a fist fight that I won. It was probably something I shouldn't have engaged in, but I didn't fight it. I pled guilty to the whatever the prosecutor wanted just to make it go away.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been flagged on this background check. Mm-hmm. Ever since. Now, I buy firearms regularly, on and off. When I want something, I buy it. I'm a hunter. I'm a shooter. And I wait. I just know I have to wait the 3 days. I've been being checked or being flagged. I can't, you know, I don't instantly get to pick up my firearm.
Well,
ever since 1972. Now, I have, since that time, had the record expunged in the state in which it had happened. It's gone. It doesn't exist anymore, and I'm still getting flagged on this background check. Now, this is ridiculous. And this man, I'm saying that if you want a background check system, do it efficiently and make it, you know, you've got to take out the waste and whatever else is going on there.
I hear you. Well, I think, you know, the experience that you relate, I think a lot of us can identify with, maybe not with respect to gun permits, but with other experiences with the federal government and their ability to check or not, their non-ability to To check things and process things in an efficient fashion. And I think your point is very well taken. Thank you, Kim, for calling us on Open Mic this morning. Matt from Hinesburg, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. And I just wanted to say I think you're doing a good job.
Well, aren't you nice to say that?
I just wanted to put out a very broad general question and then get your response. That is, what do hate crime laws ask us?
What do you mean? Help me understand what you're thinking there.
Well, I'm opinionated on the hate crime law issue, but it's just so hard to, just to put in words. So you have to bring it up somehow. Mm-hmm. And I just think that hate crime laws, it's like a self-inflicted wound.
I think you'll need to clarify that. I mean, when you ask the question, just the way you asked it, this is how I hear it. I mean, what hate crimes ask us is there something about this crime that is related to the target's race, sexual orientation, gender, one of a religion, I mean, some kind of quality or attribute of themselves as a person. That's what I think of when I think about the question the way you framed it. Is that what you're asking?
Well, I heard Mike Smith on another radio show today say that, you know, this is a tolerant society, and that's the reason that we're attacked. But would a tolerant society even have hate crime laws? See, I want to challenge hate crime laws at the very core. I don't think that we should even have them.
What do you think, then, about the arguments that brought hate crime laws into being to begin with, that some kind of special attention or punishment was merited when, an egregious action was taken by one person against another specifically because of one of those personal attributes?
What that would do is it would normalize assaults that aren't perceived that way. So in other words, your society would then tolerate some violence.
That's an interesting perspective that I had not heard before, Matt. I'm going to have to give that some thought. And I appreciate the call this morning. I'd love to know what other listeners think of Matt's idea. Give us a call at 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Casey from Waterbury, you're on the air on Open Mic.
Hi. One thing I don't hear a lot about is, no matter how somebody gets a gun, whether they steal it, they buy it on a morning radio show, or through Craigslist, legally or illegally, they have to have ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
And to get the ammunition, anybody can buy ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
It seems so strange. If they're not allowed to buy a gun and there's a check, shouldn't there be one so that we want to walk in and buy 300 rounds of ammo? You should be, checked, because otherwise these people wouldn't have stockpiles of the ammunition to be able to use.
Casey, I hear you. What leaps to mind, I mean, the first thing that occurs to me, and maybe this is just too shallow and too sort of naive, but it just occurs to me that if I don't have a weapon, my ammo isn't all that dangerous. I mean, what am I going to do, throw it at somebody?
Oh, I know, but I mean, even if I'm all for background checks. I'm all for all of that. I don't think there should be assault rifles, everybody's hands. But if they do get them, and you can get them by buying them through the newspaper or whatever, don't see people selling hundreds of rounds of ammunition online. People just walk into a store. They
just buy
Walmart,
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I know. I've been able to do that. I had a friend who got a deer rifle for her 50th birthday, and I went in and just went into my local gun store to see if I could buy her some ammo that I could put a bow on and give her for a birthday present. So you're absolutely right. I mean, that's just really, really, it's very easy to do.
So nothing I've ever heard anybody talk about.
No.
I mean, I had a rifle, a 22 over and up to 8 years old. My father taught me how to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And I packed guns. That doesn't matter to, here or there. I'm not saying people shouldn't be able to have a gun.
Well, I think, though, but what you point to, I think, does matter. The idea that you had someone who knows how to use a gun responsibly show you the ropes and instill an understanding that this is not a toy, that this is something that can cause harm To me, that makes all the difference. To me, it's not so much about gun control as gun owner control, you know, that they really ought to be more stipulations for responsible ownership and not just hand things out to anybody anywhere.
That's right. I mean, all my friends' parents, when I was a kid, my parents were insane. They thought, what? And then, you know, 2 weeks later after I got my 22, mm-hmm. my friend got shot in the eye with a BB gun.
Oh, goodness. Yeah,
which is exactly what my dad said would happen.
That's right.
You'll break your neck if you do that.
Yep, but, no, I hear you. I hear you, Casey.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for calling in. I hope you'll call us again. We're going to stop for a little bit of business right here, and we'll be back after these on Open Mic. Good morning and welcome back. You are tuned to WDEV News Radio here at AM 550, and this is the Open Mic program. Hester Fuller is my name, and I'm with you until 11 o'clock this morning, at which time Bill Sayre will join us. Rob Roper and Bill Sayre bring you program Common Sense Radio every single weekday morning at 11 o'clock, and we look forward to hearing that program and invite you to stay tuned as well. This morning, though, we have been talking this hour with listeners about the things on their mind. Mainly, we've been talking about the horrific events of Saturday overnight in Orlando, Florida, and folks' reactions and folks' thoughts about what we could do or should do, and just general reactions to these things, people drawing parallels to similar events in the past and to events involving weaponry in other places, including in Vermont. Interested in your point of view on these things, as always, going forward. We've also been monitoring the wires this morning in case there were any other developments, and as of right now, I don't have any indication that there are, but my network connection also just died, so I may be mistaken about that. In a couple of minutes, we're going to go away and listen to the network news cast, and then, of course, we'll be talking to our friends at Talk Media News in Washington, D.C., and hearing what the reactions are down there to the things that happen over the weekend and what's going on this week as well. Then coming up in our 10 o'clock hour, we're looking forward to sitting down with Bethany Dunbar from the Vermont Center for an Agricultural Economy in Hardwick. She'll be coming in. She is the Community Programs Director, and she'll be here to talk to us about the various projects and programs that she's working on. And so we hope you'll stay tuned for that. There's a lot of good stuff going on up there, a lot of stuff that's been happening since the last time Bethany was in with Sarah Waring. And a lot of those projects have advanced, and some have even morphed into even more exciting openings for the community. I'll be talking about community gardens and things like food access and the reclamation of the granite sheds up at the Atkins Field, making a public community space out of those things. It'll be really wonderful. I also understand that the Food Venture Center up there is now seeking a new anchor tenant, and so it'll be interesting to hear more about that as well. Right now, though, of course, you are tuned to WDEV News Radio, and you can hear us, as you have been able to since 1931, in Waterbury, broadcasting over 550 AM, also from 96.1 FM in Warren, Vermont, 96.5 FM in Barrie, Vermont, and blanketing the kingdom from the independently owned 101.9 FM in Island Pond. Stay tuned for news, and we'll be back on the other side. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Hester Fuller. I'm with you for another hour here on WDEV News Radio. We promised to stay on top of the story of the events in Orlando, and we do have this detail just in. The father of the man that authorities say opened fire at the Pulse nightclub in Florida in a massacre that left 49 victims dead is saying that the attack goes against everything he taught his son. He spoke to reporters this morning. Sadiq Mir Mateen, who is the father of the gunman Omar Mateen, said the attack was against his principles and against everything he ever taught his son. We will stay on top of that and have more for you as events warrant, but that is the latest thing. Just came in. The father of the man who authorities say opened fire at that nightclub says the attack goes against absolutely everything he ever taught his son. More on that, I'm sure, in the midday news service. Right now, though, we're going to jump down to our friends in Washington, Victoria Jones of Talk Media News. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning.
What's going on down there? Is everybody abuzz about the events of Orlando?
Yes, that is the news here. That is what everybody is talking about, and that is what everybody will be talking about during the course of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, that is what politicians were reacting to over the weekend. It has dominated everything. I mean, this has really been the only topic. I mean, if I wanted to talk about anything else, it would be very difficult for me to do so. Donald Trump has spoken this morning on Fox and Friends and has said we have to really increase the bombing overseas. He's also said that we have no idea as to paperwork as to where they come from in terms of refugees. Is also saying that Muslims know who the people are that are sick with hate, and largely, he said, they know who they are. They have to turn them in. They know who they are. They see them. He's speaking later today in New Hampshire, next door to you, as I'm sure you know, and will probably say things along these lines, and will be speaking, of course, about national security. I imagine it will be a very bombastic speech. So Hillary Clinton is also speaking today. She has already spoken out, and she said, I believe strongly that common sense gun safety reform across our country would make a difference. She countered the gun regulations that Florida does not have in place, including laws requiring permits to carry a shotgun or rifle, purchase a gun, or requiring gun owners be licensed, that she said could help prevent a tragedy. So she is going to be giving a speech also. And I can't figure out who is speaking first or if they're basically speaking at the same time. I haven't been able to figure that out. So that's going to be very interesting. A political topic slightly removed from, although I'm sure it will in some way play in, but slightly removed from this is that Bernie Sanders will be meeting with Hillary Clinton tomorrow evening, after as the results of the Washington D.C. primary come in, which will be kind of interesting. That, of course, the last primary in the primary season, and he was saying on the Sunday shows that he wants to know whether she would be vigorous in supporting issues, and he mentioned a few of them. Working families and the middle class, climate change, health care for all, making public colleges and universities tuition-free, progressive taxation, and reining in Wall Street. So now, depending on that, he said, after we have that kind of discussion and after we can determine whether or not we're going to have a strong and progressive platform, I will be able to make other decisions, he said. Now, he still hasn't said whether he'll support her candidacy, but he did say that he will continue to do everything he can to make sure that Donald Trump does not become president of the United States. But he did not answer a question asked about whether he was still an active candidate for president.
Well, that seems consistent with what he's been saying all along, that he wants to stay on so that every vote that someone wants to cast has some meaning to it.
Right, exactly.
So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Victoria Jones, thank you so much for your call. I look forward to it every Monday morning. And we will talk to you again next week.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You are listening to Open Mic on WDEV Radio, WDEV News Radio, where we are staying on top of the events in Orlando as they unfold. But I also want to tell you that in just a moment, I will be joined by someone we've heard here before. Bethany Dunbar is here from the Center for an Agricultural Economy, and we'll be talking about the community programs that she manages up there. There's a lot of neat stuff happening and popping up that way, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about it. We will be back right after this. Good morning and welcome back. You are listening to Open Mic Radio here on WDEV. Hester Fuller is my name, and I will be with you until 11 o'clock this morning on a Monday morning following a very, very difficult weekend for many of us. Once again, we see the picture of a very angry and disaffected person marching into, this time, a nightclub in Florida and letting loose with the weaponry and killing 49 other people before he himself was taken down. When you hear these stories about these folks who somehow see that the kind of open American society we all belong to is somehow militating against their interests, so disaffected, so unattached to the circumstances in which they find themselves, that they feel that they can take this step or that they must take this step. My heart always goes to what in the world can we do about this. And one of the solutions may well be developing our own communities, our own sense of community, and bringing people in and bringing people, making them part, making them understand that they are a part of the community. And so it is with great pleasure I welcome my guest this morning, who is in fact the Community Projects Coordinator for the Vermont Center for an Agricultural Economy, Bethany Dunbar. Good morning, Bethany.
Good morning, Hester.
So what kind of community building things are happening up that way?
Well, there's a lot going on, and I do think that, you know, we can't change the whole world every day, but we can do what we can within our communities to bring people together who might not usually be mm-hmm. together. And so some of the projects I want to talk to you about today are particularly doing that. The garden expansion that we made was done with help from New England Grassroots Environment Fund. And originally we had 28 garden beds. And at this point we have 64 spots. They're not all the same size.
Now, one thing I want to just remind folks who maybe don't quite remember, when last time you were here, mm-hmm. we were talking about the inauguration of the Hoop House.
Yes.
To start new community gardening space, to start your starters early, and also arranging for community beds all over the place, correct?
Correct.
So tell us now the extent of that, 64 beds available?
Yeah, either 64 beds or bench spots inside the Hoop House.
Mm-hmm.
So the Hardwick Community Gardens are located on a piece of property that we own called Atkins Field, which is 15 acres. And more we feel that it's having that ability to bring people together. The grant was written with the Hardwick Area Food Pantry, who has been a terrific partner in many of the projects that we've been doing. And our goal was to give first priority to food pantry clients who are low income and who are trying to get themselves some better food.
Mm-hmm.
And so to go along with that, we also decided to start a mentorship program. We've been doing monthly gatherings for folks on different topics related to gardening and cooking. And so this year, as part of our Ben & Jerry's Grow Your Own project, we are matching up some knowledgeable gardeners with some new gardeners, because the gatherings are fun, but this is more of a, you know, it's 8 weeks or 8 sessions. You can really dig in,
so to speak.
Literally. And really, you know.
So the idea here is each one teach one. The idea is that folks who want to participate in community gardens may come in without the kind of background or the experience or knowledge about how to do this.
So exactly.
You match them up with folks who can help them.
Right,
do
right.
Gardens.
And that goes both ways in terms of either food pantry clients who happen to have that knowledge, helping someone who's, you know, not low income but has never done it, you know, or some folks who have lots of experience and aren't low income, helping folks who are pantry clients to learn.
Okay.
And the thing that has really kind of made me realize that we were at least successful in creating a culture or a climate here is the group that I like to call the rogue gardener,
the rogue
garden mentors. Because we put a lot of time and effort, as thanks to this grant from Ben & Jerry's, into research on what are the best practices for mentorship.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke with some folks at Mobius Mentoring and some folks with Mercy Connections about how you really do mentoring that works, mm-hmm. because sometimes the matches are too casual and so they don't stick or it doesn't really happen. So I put this whole program together very carefully and spent lots of time and made lots of documents. And then I started calling the people who wanted to be mentees, and one of them said, "Oh, I've got Patty." And I said, "What?"
People are able to find their own mentors in the community. These are your rogue mentors?
These are my rogue mentors, and I just love it. I mean, you know, it'll be really interesting to see. Hopefully those pairings will work just as well as what I'm doing.
Sure.
You know, I love anything of this type of thing that I can kind of work myself out of a job is really mm-hmm. always kind of my goal. Mm-hmm. So it'll be awesome if that works.
I'm looking at time to see if we need to do a break. I guess we don't. Well, how happy is that? So the mentoring program, in addition to the matchup, mm-hmm. what are the other parts of this?
Okay, so they have to agree to meet 8 times and set 3 goals. So, for example, it might be something as simple as, I want to grow radishes, or I want to learn weeds, or one today was, I want to stick to my plan. Now, that's a great one. You know, that's always so hard to do. So they set the goals, and they agree to meet 8 times, and they agree to speak to me at the end about how it went. So we'll be able to measure the success of those goals, and we'll have a celebration at the end with everyone, the mentors and the mentees and the rogues as well, mm-hmm. you know, if they decide to join us. So, yeah, I mean, that's basically it. And they all are at the community gardens. We had some interest from folks who don't have a bed at the community gardens, but we figured for this first year, for this pilot project, we would just do it at the community gardens. And if it's really popular and people like it, and we can figure out a way to have folks going to other people's homes, that could be a piece of it next year.
So talk a bit about the community gardens. They're not all contained at Atkins Field, if I understand.
Sure, yep. Well, the Hardwick Community Gardens, that is at Atkins Field. And it's beds outside, beds in the hoop house, and benches. And I would say that there's a lot of interest in going outside of that field. Mm-hmm. There's definitely interest from some folks who live in some of the housing units mm-hmm. at having a community garden at their own housing unit. But we haven't really figured out if we can accomplish that. We haven't met with the housing folks yet. There's some thought of it, that it would be nice, especially... I guess maybe this is a good transition into the other project I wanted to talk to you about. I've been working on this listening project.
And we are going to get to that in just a moment. But I had one other question, which, of course, has just flown totally out of my head. Oh, yeah. Who actually is using the community beds now?
Okay. So we have food pantry clients, regular, anyone from the community. We have several beds that are set aside for a volunteer who's growing for the food pantry. Hardwick Elementary School uses 3 of the beds, and Green Mountain Tech and Career Center is starting a pre-tech program at Hazen in related to agriculture, and they have 2 beds. And we also have one demonstration bed of Abenaki plants. So it's,
now, what's an Abenaki plant?
Well, there are certain varieties of vegetables that were grown by Native Americans in the area. And a couple of us went to a class about that called Seeds of Renewal. And also our garden mentor volunteer, her name is Julie Nichols, is actually Abenaki herself. And so she was very interested in doing this. And so that food will go to the pantry as well.
Terrific. This sounds really, really wonderful. The Community Gardens Program is just one of the many things that are going on at the Center for an Agricultural Economy up in Hardwick, and we will be back with Bethany in just a moment. If you've got questions or comments, or you're participating in one of the great things that's going on up there, give us a call and tell us about your experience. 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. Building community through agriculture. We will be right back after these words. Good morning and welcome back. You are listening to Open Mic on News Radio WDEV. It's about 26 minutes after 10 o'clock. My guest this hour is Bethany Dunbar. She is the Community Projects Coordinator for the Vermont Center for an Agricultural Economy. We were just talking about the food access, the Grow Your Own program up there, and the food mentoring, the growing mentoring program that you guys have going up there. These are wonderful ideas. Where are you getting all these great ideas from? How do you decide what you're going to be doing up there?
Well, we try to listen, and which leads me into a project we're calling the Listening Project. Instead of just saying, hey, let's, you know, set up something that we think would be cool, we try really hard to go around and get priorities from the community itself. And as we at the Center for an Agricultural Economy, you know, a lot of the projects at the center are for businesses and for farmers and for other sectors of the food economy. My piece of it is like thinking about the whole end of it, the community end of it. And we wanted to think about food access mm. and what we like to call food sovereignty or food independence. And that's what Grow Your Own is all about. So We got a grant from the Catholic Campaign for Human Development to work on this listening project. And it started in October. And we started at the food pantry, which has been one of our partners all along.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And the start was to actually go into the pantry and listen and really hear.
What do you mean listen?
Well, really actively listen and ask questions and interview folks that are coming through and ask them what do they like about Hardwick and what would they like to see better. And this is the beginning of a larger community organizing project, which our hope is that now as we move into the second year, that it moves out into the whole Northeast Kingdom and that we begin to work with partners other than food-oriented.
Because now, you start out with questions about food access, and that's where you're assuming that the interest is coming
right,
from.
Right.
Is that what you found?
It is, but we quickly found out that that wasn't the only thing, that hunger and food access are huge, huge problems, which we kind of knew in a vague way. Mm-hmm. Now we kind of know more about, like, individuals and how hard it is. And there was one person who, they go to the food pantry and they have to get their food back to the this particular person was homeless, essentially, and had to get his food back to his hotel, which is, you know, a quarter of a mile, and it's winter, and he's only got a shopping cart. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a month's worth of food piled into a shopping cart. This particular person wasn't that healthy. And it just begins to give you a face of what the access issues really are. Mm-hmm. So we found as much issue with transportation as we found with food.
Mm.
And it began to make us realize that this project we need to speak with others and really build it out. And so that's what we're doing this year. We're beginning to create a sponsoring committee that could go take it forward. And we're working with some of the churches and the Grange. The Caledonia Grange has been a wonderful partner for us. Also the food pantry, to just try to really continue to scope out what those issues are and make this web, make this network big, and so that it's not just a few of us sitting there saying, well, what should we do? That we bring in new folks, we bring in folks we haven't necessarily listened to in the past. And so it's really interesting because it takes you out of your comfort zone as a middle-class person. I was really nervous that first day, and I thought, who's going to want to talk to me about mm-hmm. this? But really, most people did, and there were certainly some who didn't. But there were a lot of people who did, and we have our second goal out of this is not just to hear, but also to draw people in and find new leaders who can help create the agenda mm-hmm. so that it is the whole community's agenda.
So what starts as just kind of a community survey, really, to see how you could best apply the resources and the talents at your disposal through the Ag Center is sort of turning into something much broader, which is including identifying new leadership in the area and helping get that sort of getting its own steam up.
Exactly. And ultimately that it's not just listening, it's action.
Mm-hmm.
That we take a piece that is identified by, we try to make our group as big and as wide as it can be before we really choose that first action item. And then we have a big enough network that we can create some political power and say, hey, we need transportation in Hardwick. Or in Newport, or in Derby Line, or in St. Johnsbury. Or linking them all. Exactly. And a lot of it is for work. A lot of it is for daycare. It might be for medical, or just to get to the food pantry from just down the street.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to be creative. I know that transportation has been a huge issue for the kingdom for a long time, and it's not easy because it's expensive.
It is indeed.
And so as we get to that phase, I think it will be really interesting. And I don't know that transportation will be the only piece either. As we start talking with folks in Derby Line, of course, there's so much concern about what happened with the EB5 project and, you know, what's going to happen to our area in a bigger sense with the loss of that mm-hmm. that project, and what are the concerns that everyone has related to that. So
If you've got questions for Bethany Dunbar, she's here. She's the projects community projects coordinator for the Vermont Center for an Agricultural Economy. And the numbers here to talk to Bethany or to me are 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Now, the strategy you describe in describing the listening project sounds a lot like the community visits project of the Vermont Council for Rural Development.
Yes.
Is that a way you're taking a bit of a lead from them? Or how does
we
this...
definitely are. Paul Costello, who runs the Vermont Council for Rural Development, is on our board, and he was the first person I talked to when I started this. And the community visit project did come to Hardwick, mm-hmm. and we identified a number of goals with that. I think that the two go hand in glove in that this project with Catholic Campaign for Human Development, there is potential to be funded for 6 years so that it can reach out beyond the one community for one thing, and it can also stretch out in time. The community visit project has task forces in the town, but the community visit itself is like a three-phase kind of intensive.
And it's sort of a catalyst for this sort of community action.
Yes. And so our hope is that this follows upon that community visit process and carries it on.
So leadership coming there from the Center for an Agricultural Economy. Last time we talked, Bethany, too, we were talking about the reclamation of the granite sheds down at Atkins Field. How's that little project coming
along? Sure are. Oh, it's exciting. We are working with partners to create a plan. The shed has been braced up, and the roof is patched. And our next stage is to identify and really confirm partners who will use that space. Mm-hmm. It's 350 feet long. If folks haven't seen it, you should come to the farmer's market on Friday afternoons, 3 to 6. It's a great little farmer's market.
It is.
And,
the guy with the Nepali food gums.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even say another word.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's just some other really great mm-hmm. stuff, too. But the granite shed dominates that field, and it's was a highlight of business back more than 100 years ago, and our hope is that it'll be a highlight of community mm-hmm. once we get our partners firmed up. Folks are working through strategic plans with various organizations, so I can't really say a lot about it, but we have identified partners, and I think that they're solid, and I think that it will happen, and I don't know how quickly. But we're still working on it.
But boy, for someone who's trying to work herself out of a job, you're doing a really poor job. It just gets busier and busier.
Right. Well, yeah. But I think, too, that it's so wonderful to have the opportunity to work for an organization that's willing to, let's try something and see how well it works. And if I can work myself out of a job in one area, I'm certainly going to have something to do somewhere else.
It certainly sounds that way. Give us a call if you'd like to ask Bethany Dunbar a question, 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. We'll connect you with Bethany and with me here at the Open Mic program. Now, coming up later on this summer, we got a big agricultural awareness event, don't we?
We sure do.
Talk to us about that. Where are you at with the planning for the Farm and Field Day, Farm and Food Days?
Well, this is a really exciting year for Kingdom Farm and Food Days because we had some help from Northeast Kingdom Travel and Tourism Association and some grant funding to help us with the marketing piece and the organizing piece. Mm-hmm. So Gloria Bruce, who's just fabulous, helped us through. And there was an early grant deadline to have the funds spent. So actually, we're pretty well planned. There is still an opportunity for farms to join if they would like to. But our print materials have been printed, which is just amazing to me because last year I think we were just planning in July, which is kind of how this project has been from the beginning. It's very organic, I guess I would say, in many ways of that word. Kind of started with high mowing organic seeds.
Mm-hmm. Tom Stearns
and Pete Johnson at Pete's Greens, and it has grown from there. This year, thanks to Gloria's help, we have 20 venues, including we'll be doing a fun day at Atkins Field. The dates of Kingdom Farm and Food are August 19th, 20th, and 21st. And another piece that we managed to do this year, which we're really excited about, is lining up with the Open Farm Week. So there will be open houses at farms all over Vermont in the same time frame. And we think that with our marketing and their marketing, it's really going to bring a lot of folks out to some of these venues.
Yeah. Now, for folks who have not participated or, you know, been in attendance at Farm and Food Days in the past, what are some of the things that they can expect to see?
Okay. Well, starting at Atkins Field, I got to promote our own little
thing.
Yeah,
you do.
We're going to have draft horse demonstrations and blacksmithing demonstrations and some fiber arts folks doing some spinning. And that will be Friday. Then, of course, there's the farmers market, and then there's farmers markets in Craftsbury and other farmers markets. There will be a dinner at, if anyone knows, Sandywood Farm in Wolcott. Mm-hmm. They have a beautiful...
Up on West Hill there, up on the...
Yes.
I guess it's Town Hill by then.
Yeah. And they have a hoop house where they have dinners. There will be the reindeer farm up in... Brownington or Charleston.
We'll check the details before August. We can find that out.
Yep. Check out the website, kingdomfarmandfood.org. And High Mowing will once again have its field trials. There will be tastings there. There won't be the giant meal that there has been, but there will be some food. And Pete's Greens is doing hay rides again. And Craftsbury Outdoor Center is doing a bike tour over to Hill Farmstead. That's a new piece. So... a lot of new cool stuff this year, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be right smack dab in the middle of fair and field day season in Vermont, too. So just a lot going on.
It is, which in some ways I think will be another advantage, so that if a tourist comes to Vermont, they can hit the Orleans County Fair, Open Farm in some other part of the state, and take advantage of some of these workshops at High Mowing. You know, it's really quite an offering this year. I'm really excited about it.
It's going to be pretty exciting indeed. Looking forward to that. My guest is Bethany Dunbar from the Center for an Agricultural Economy, and we're welcoming your phone calls. You can ring us up at 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. We're talking about building community through food and farm and gardening education and lots of different avenues and different ways in. There's a lot of you were doing these workshops for folks on different very specific food related things. Those, I gather, are continuing through the Food Access Program. Is that correct?
Yes. The next one that Grow Your Own has coming up is Eat Cooking from the Garden.
Ooh.
Which will be July 9th. And then we have in August 6th, we have a block party, which is just a lot of fun, and it's a chance for us to honor our volunteers and recognize all their hard work. I mean, we couldn't do half of what we're doing if we didn't have these volunteers. Mm-hmm. It's terrific. They're phenomenal. And one other event date that I would love to throw out is that June 30th, we will be having a meeting of the Listening Project group and some training. So if people are vaguely aware of community organizing and would like to have a bit of training on it, we'll have that in the afternoon. And then in the evening, we'll be meeting with groups that could potentially be part of our sponsoring committee and take it forward. So between and now and then, some folks are doing house meetings. So there's many ways for people to get involved. We're also, a few of the group are doing what we call one-on-ones, which is really just sitting down with someone in a very intentional way to ask specific questions. The question that we're going to ask at the house meetings is one that was our helper, InterValley Project, which has been doing this kind of thing for decades. Ken Galston came up with it. And the question is, what does it mean to be a resident of the Northeast Kingdom?
Mm-hmm.
So if you can imagine sitting around the table at a house meeting with a dozen folks really thinking about that question, I feel like it's perfect because it will give people a chance to come up with the ideas why they love the kingdom and also come up with what's wrong here, what needs to be improved.
Yeah. Sounds like a really, really fascinating project. Now, volunteers are welcome on a number of different projects that you do. Can you describe for our listeners the kinds of tasks that your volunteers are undertaking? This is, I think, what will recruit them.
Well, we need volunteers for weeding.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. We need volunteers. We had the volunteers built the hoop house. Mm-hmm. We need volunteers to lead these gatherings. Mm-hmm. We need so many volunteers. The garden beds were built by middle school student volunteers, and they were just terrific. So we need volunteers for many, many things. And
so your hard skills will come in handy. Lots of different ways you can be useful in this if you want to volunteer. How could a prospective volunteer get connected with all this? How can they find out how to?
Probably the best way is just shoot me an email. It's bethany@hardwickagriculture.org. And just for example, one of our volunteers, Sarah Vecchi, has done so much with Grow Your Own and really helped to create it, help form it. She's actually moving to Lincoln and probably going to start it there.
Pretty good.
So, you know, the volunteers have all different roles depending on their different interests, but we've probably got something for you if you want to volunteer.
It sounds like it'd be a lot of fun to do that and a great way to get out and take advantage of Vermont's all-too-short growing season. To participate in a way that helps a lot of other folks benefit from that as well. I'd like to shift focus just a little bit to the Food Venture Center, which is up there on the grounds where you are. It's my understanding that the Food Venture Center is now looking for a new anchor tenant. Is that correct?
That's correct. We have the Venture Center has two anchor tenant spots, which is kind of the way we're trying to frame it in the Granite Shed also, like have a couple of anchor tenants and some other smaller organizations. So the one of the anchor tenants is Jasper Hill. They make a lot of their award-winning cheeses there and then take it up to the cellars to be aged. Mm-hmm. And the other anchor tenant is Grassroots Distribution, which is an arm of Hill Farmstead. And that space is being emptied. So we're looking for requests for proposal for new organizations and businesses that would be interested in using that space.
And they're vacating because they just have outgrown it? Is that the idea, or they need to be doing?
Well, they did their own expansion at their place. So my understanding is they don't really need it anymore. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the point, right? You start them there and you grow them and they go off and fly on their own. So now we need a new one. What kinds of things do you see happening? What kind of space is it?
It's a big flexible space. I think that it could be redesigned for many possibilities. And I would love to refer people who are interested in that part to one of my colleagues, Connor Gorham, who's the facilities manager. He is the guy to get in touch with, and his email is basically very much like mine, connor@hardwickagriculture.org.
So, is that C-O-N-N-O-R?
That is it.
Okay.
Yeah.
At hardwickagriculture.org. If you or someone you know has a business that could use some production space in the Food Venture Center, get in touch with Connor and let him know. Growing staff over there as well, as I understand it.
Yes, we also have just hired a young woman named Reeve Basem to be our education and agriculture coordinator for OSSU.
The supervisory union.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, we do coordinating with farm to school activities and goals, and that is our only schools are the OSSU schools. Mm-hmm. So that's just to sort of put a fine point on that. We're hyper local with this. Our goal with this project is to really advance every school, do that listening, find out where each school is at and what they would like to be doing, either with having more local food in their cafeteria, which is what we all are hoping for. Also, you know, possibly more educational pieces. And I think that where we fit in is really those community connections and finding farmers that are willing to possibly host a field trip or come into the school. And so Reeve's job is scoping out everything that's going on and helping to advance it all to the next level in each school. for this district.
That's a full plate, as it were.
Oh, yeah.
Tremendous. My guest has been Bethany Dunbar. She's here from the Center for an Agricultural Economy. We've been talking about the community building projects that they have underway, and also just about the Food Venture Center and some new developments there as well. You can find out more at their website, and the URL is just simply www.hardwickagriculture.org. And you can also get hold of Bethany if you have thoughts or comments about any of the programs or questions. You can write to her at Bethany@HardwickAgriculture.org. And that email again for the Food Venture Center, if you know of or you are indeed a food-related production business and you're looking for new space and looking to be doing your business in a community of folks who are doing lots of neat things with local agricultural produce, you want to get in touch with Connor Gorham at the Agriculture Center, and you can write to him, email connor@hardwickagriculture.org. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Esther.
I really appreciate it. We'll be right back with a little bit more of Open Mic after this break. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic on WDEV. Hester Fuller is my name. I'm with you until 11 o'clock this morning, at which time we will hear from Bill Sayre and Rob Roper, who will be in with Common Sense Radio, as they are every weekday morning at 11 o'clock. Looking forward to hearing from them. I've been just chatting with Bethany Dunbar for a bit about the events and programs that are really going full tilt there up at the Center for an Agroeconomy in Hardwick. And just it's wonderful to see that kind of community building going on through the agriculture scene and the agricultural economy up that way. Love to hear from you. Give us a call, if you would, 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. Love to know what you're thinking about and what you see happening in the world that you think we should be paying attention to, as we often do. I've been following the story and the developments out of Orlando. We know that the father of the person who is the person who opened fire down at that nightclub in Orlando has come online to say that he had no idea what his son was up to, and that this went against everything that he ever taught his son. Other developments in that story this hour: Mayor Bill de Blasio of New York City says that the city is deploying more than 500 anti-terrorism officers around the city today as a precaution after the deadliest mass shooting in modern U.S. history. Law enforcement officials are in Penn Station's Amtrak area. They've got a machine that's used for swabbing bags to check for bomb residue. TSA officials, police and National Guards people dressed in fatigues are patrolling Penn Station this morning. It's actually not an unusual sight since 9/11 even. Lots and lots of impact being felt all around the country. Both de Blasio and Governor Andrew Cuomo will be attending a vigil at the Stonewall Inn in Manhattan later today. Hundreds of people gathered there yesterday. Some of them were chanting "No hate and more love." So the aftermath of the Orlando killings reverberating all around the country. Glad to be with you on this Monday morning at about 11:05, sitting here with Tom McLeod. Tom, how was your weekend, by the way?
It was a good weekend.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking a little bit of a vacation next weekend. It's kind of coming together. It's not completely official yet, but weather's supposed to be good from Wednesday through the weekend. So
Terrific. This
past weekend was not the vacation. I feel bad for anybody who was out camping in a snowsuit, maybe.
Unless they were with somebody they were really, really fond of and had to, you know, cuddle up, buttercup.
That's a good point.
That wouldn't have been so bad.
Good way. But this time of year, I know people get down when the weather happens like this, but we know the good stuff is coming when it's, say, October and you have a weekend like this, then you've got to get ready for, here we go.
Yeah, we're hoping that this just quickly turns itself around and gets back on track. How often have we said that this spring?
Well, and this winter, where we had the warm weather in the spring,
that's right,
which hasn't been bad.
That's right. And snowfall in late May, didn't need that.
No.
But, you know, it's Vermont. I guess we should just get used to it.
It's kind of a weekend. I think Roger Hill was saying this morning they'd like to take one day off this week just to probably run away from the weather. One of the hardest jobs. Vermont weather is hard, but this summer, when he's had a forecast like this weekend, Sunday, rain in the morning, sun midday, then clouds, then showers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just a little bit of everything. Yeah, it's like an instant course in Vermont meteorology.
Yep.
Just wake up and look out the window.
I think we might have a phone call, so let me check that out for you. All righty.
You're listening to Open Mic, where anything goes sometimes. We're talking about the things that have concerned you, and we have also just come off talking about the wonderful community development, community organizing efforts coming out of the Center for an Agriculture Economy up in Hardwick with Bethany Dunbar. And if you have thoughts about any of those things, give us a call, 244-1777. Or toll free, 1-877-291-8255. Hester Fuller is my name, and I'm with you every Monday morning from 9 until 11. And I'll be back this coming Wednesday as well. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Actually, I suppose we could talk about it now because we're pretty close to
yes, that caller was breaking up really bad. So
oh,
been,
so maybe they'll call
that.
Us again. Yep. That's all right. I'm going to be back this week, Tom. Did you know that?
You mentioned that on Wednesday. You got a special show, but
I got a special show lined up on Wednesday, and I'm groping frantically for my notes so that I can tell you exactly who's going to be here and what we're going to be talking about.
It'll all come together. It'll be all right.
Well, anyway, I can tell you that we will be learning more about a preliminary price comparison study. I know that sounds like a real toe-tapping suspenseful.
Yes.
But it's going to be a lot. It's going to be pretty interesting. The Vermont Agency of Agriculture has done a study comparing prices for commonly purchased foods that are available at Vermont farmers markets and comparing that to what you would have to pay in a supermarket. A lot of people would assume that the supermarket's going to be less expensive, but that's not always the case. And we're going to hear more about that on Wednesday because Abby Willard of the Vermont Agency of Agriculture, Food and Marketing will be in with their new report. Again, a price comparison study released by the Vermont Agency of Ag suggests that some commonly purchased foods can be affordably priced if you shop for them at Vermont farmers markets. And we're going to find out more about that on Wednesday in our first hour. In our second hour Wednesday, we're looking forward to chatting with Ross Connolly, the editor, outgoing editor at the Hardwick Gazette, which has been publishing since, goodness, 19th century. He's getting out of the newspaper business after a long, long time, and he's doing it in a most unusual way, a very inventive way. He has been trying to sell the paper for some time. You probably heard this already, but he's been trying to sell the paper, hadn't had takers, and is decided to do it in a different way. He's holding an essay contest, 400 words. Why do you think you want to run a paper? And what about the local papers? And what is their role anyway? And that plus, actually, you should read the Gazette and get all the specifics. I managed to drop that sheet as well. Submit your essay and $175, and you might win yourself a weekly newspaper. So our topic on Wednesday, in fact, will be the role of weekly papers in the communities we live in, the communities within the sound of my voice. They're so important. Hardwick Gazette is just one. The Barton Chronicle, I think of the Stowe Reporter, I think of the Lamoille News, I think of all those papers that I certainly love to check. I confess, though, the first thing I go to is the police blotter. That's interesting. It's an interesting piece of every single paper. Many good stories there.
On the morning program for years, the Wake Up Vermont program, Eric Michaels always has in the about 8:45 at each day interview, Addison.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he talks with Ross, and so it's a good feature.
It's a wonderful feature, and it's great to get that right down at the ground level, touch on the pulse of what Vermonters are thinking about things and what's important, what's registering out there in the big wide world. So we'll talk with Ross Connolly and a couple of other guests that we're working on. I can't tell you about just yet on Wednesday morning in the 10 o'clock hour, the role of the weekly papers in this age of the 24/7 news media maw. Right now, though, we are coming up on 11 o'clock and a newscast, and this is WDEV AM 550. Also broadcasting at 96.1 in Warren, Vermont, 96.5 out of Barrie, and blanketing the Northeast Kingdom from the independently owned 101.2 in Island Pond. Hester Fuller is my name. Thank you so much for listening.
The Open Mic Podcast is brought to you by Hickok Boardman, Dennis Ricker and Brown.
Find us online at hbinsurance.com, and you're always welcome to visit us on Facebook, in Vermont, online, on the phone. Hickok and Boardman Insurance Group. We are here when you need us.